This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Let's continue our conversation about design and inclusion. Every now and then on the show, topics come up from my own meandering experience. And as a legally blind person, I run into my fair share of accessibility issues. Some of them roll off my shoulder, while others gnaw at me. The ones that do the gnawing are the ones that present themselves over and over and over again. Apps that I use every day certainly fall into that category, and digital accessibility specialist Denis Boudreau joins us now to hear out one of my gripes. Denis is the founder of Inclusive Communication and joins us from Montreal this morning. Hey, good morning, Denis. Great to chat with you once again.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, Denis, you'll have to bear with me here because I'm going to walk through some issues that I've been having with the ESPN Fantasy Sports app. And we're going to be putting some images of screen grabs from my phone on screen. So I'll be describing them as we go. The first few picks are display settings on my phone. You'll see preferred font size and my preferred zoom. So my font size is certainly pretty big and my zoom is also pretty significant along the way. In my I keep my font size at the second biggest font. And then looking at the zoom setting, I keep my zoom setting right in the middle. I find that if I make the zoom any further than that, it really messes up the majority of my apps and turns my web browser into chaos. The other thing I want to note here is that I keep my phone in dark mode so that it's easier on my light sensitive eyes. Now let's look at one of the manifestations of how this ends up popping up on screen. We'll put up a picture here of my Gmail app. A lot of my apps accommodate these settings perfectly. We've got a screen grab here of my Gmail, the nice big font zoomed in nicely, and with the dark mode in full effect. It is perfection. So now we move over to an app that necessarily has been giving me some trouble. The next few picks come from the ESPN Fantasy app. You'll see how my dark mode, zoom, and font size not reflected at all. The font is tiny and the numbers are pretty much illegible for me. So then you think to yourself, okay, well, maybe you can fix this in the settings. So we go over to the settings page. The next picture is going to show the settings page on my ESPN app. You'll see there are no accessibility settings or display settings available at all. You get what you get. And I've been speaking with two other fantasy players who are both blind. They both experienced screen reader / voiceover issues inside the ESPN Fantasy app on their iPhones. So it's not just an Android problem or a Dave Brown problem either. The next picture is going to come from my preferred fantasy sports app, Yahoo. You'll see it's not perfect. My zoom and font size tend to blur the content a little bit, but irrespective, at least my preferred settings are reflected. I should mention we've interviewed Verizon's head of accessibility, Kasiah Timmons, about the steps Yahoo has taken to make their product more malleable for users, and they're pretty proud of the work that they do, and it was super cool chatting with Kasiah on the show a little while ago. Now we're coming back to the ESPN app. The last pick is back in the ESPN app. This one isn't necessarily a low vision issue as it is a usability issue. To sort stats, the button you press is teeny tiny. Yes, after tapping it about 5 or 6 times, you can make it function, but it's always a hassle, and that got me thinking about individuals who might have some motor issues. Now, Denis, you also did an audit of the ESPN app. What were some of your observations?
Where to begin? Okay, so I started actually looking at what you were saying about your two blind friends. So I turned on VoiceOver on iOS, which is a screen reader embedded into the device to listen to screens, like applications like this one, for instance. And most things just don't work. I can understand how your friends were saying that things weren't great. Being sighted and looking at what I would be missing if I was not like listening to everything, pretty much everything is not as it should be. Like, I'll give you a couple of examples. You have that setting button on the top right corner that you were talking about. That button is not even conveyed at all to someone with a screen reader, so they would not even know that there is a button there for them to go to settings. Not that it would matter all that much, of course, like, because what you said, you can't change anything for accessibility. But that was one. Speaking of buttons on the top left corner, for instance, same thing. There's a back button to go back a screen. That one is not picked up either, so you can't really go back through your navigation. You have to keep navigating through the different buttons that are there because you can't just go back to the previous screen that you were on. And speaking of those buttons, most of them on the screen are like you'll hear what the text actually says, like stat or view or this or that, but you don't hear anything about that being a like an actionable control, like a link or a button, for instance. So you don't really know that you can activate those things or trigger those things to get to a different place. Images are not always described with proper description. You get descriptions like darklogo.png, which is a format for images, as opposed to getting the actual content of that particular button, which in that case was, I think, UFC Night Fight or something. The reading order through the app is also all out of whack. So you get to different places pretty much randomly. You're not following the order of the content. And so on and so forth. There were a couple of other things. Just looking at that from the screen, the voiceover or screen reader perspective. Go ahead.
No, please, because I know you had some other observations as well from other accessibility issues.
Well, right, exactly. That's where I was going. So, and then I looked at what you were saying with low vision issues, for instance, and I could confirm everything that you said. So, not being able to set up anything the way that you would like it within the app, but maybe more importantly, all your own settings from your device not being transferred over to that app, which is really like one of the biggest flaws you can make when you're building an app for accessibility, because you want that app to be flexible and adaptable to the user's preferences. That's pretty much a baseline, but none of them are taken into consideration. So whether it's your dark mode preference, whether it's the font size, which is an obvious one, or something that you sort of alluded to, but this idea that as you make things bigger, that it would reflow in a way that would still work for you. And this is all basically due to not applying best practices for development. It's as simple as that. Sadly, it's as simple as that.
So, Denis, it kind of leads me into this question, and I think you alluded to it a little bit here, but why is it that some apps are designed to reflect preferred settings and some aren't?
It comes down to awareness, right? I mean, if the developers don't know about accessibility, of course they will not think about this because, you know, why would they? I think it's mostly that reason. If they have accessibility on their radar, if it's a consideration, if it's a requirement, then some of that get looped into their process. But if this is not something that they ever thought about, then we get examples like the ESPN Fantasy app where nothing is really made to be accessible.
So, Denis, if they are going to be so rigid in their aesthetic, which maybe sometimes I understand designers put a lot of time into these apps and they want to make them look good, why don't they have options in the settings to accommodate unique needs?
Accessibility and aesthetics don't have to be a zero-sum game, right? Mm-hmm, they can work mm-hmm. together. We see that in so many different apps. Most big organizations, the size of Disney or ESPN, are very much aware about accessibility. So are these folks as well. For some reason, it didn't find its way into that particular app. But the reason why these settings are not in there is simply because, you know, if you don't think about it in the first place, it's not going. If you don't plan for it in the first place, it's not going to find its way into your application. It comes down to awareness. It kind of reminds me of, say the video industry, for instance. In the past couple of years, we've had a lot of improvements. Like, there's one game that comes to mind, The Last of Us Part II, which was, I think, the very first game that came out being completely accessible to mm-hmm. people with disabilities, mm-hmm. with a bunch of settings that you could sort of set to your own preferences. You know, like color blindness would be a very obvious one, but also having captions on everything and making sure that, you know, you could use the controls in different ways so that you weren't stuck with using the controller that you normally would have with your Xbox or your PlayStation. So there were a bunch of features in there. So it's slowly getting into the culture of games or applications in general, but we're still not completely there, as you can see with that particular one.
Denis, I know this question might be a little bit controversial, but does it surprise you that a company like ESPN, which is owned by a behemoth like Disney, just has such a woeful app when it comes to accessibility?
It doesn't. It really doesn't. I wish I could say that it did, because, you know, the norm would be that apps are accessible, but, you know, the vast majority of them are not. So What is most surprising, I'd say, is that coming from an organization like Disney, like sitting at the top of this, and how they're very much aware of accessibility in lawsuits. I mean, if you do a quick Google search on Disney and accessibility lawsuit, you might find a couple links in there. So it's not as if they've never heard of this before. And yet somehow it finds its way into certain areas of their business, but not others. So it goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. It's a question of really, insisting on the importance of applying accessibility standards to your process, your project. And that particular team or that particular group in general, understanding the benefits of accessibility, because really I think that's what needs to be worth being reminded in this case. I mean, when you think about lawsuits, like in last year alone, there were over 3,500 lawsuits in the United States. So companies like Disney or like bigger players were, a lot of them were in there, some of them being sued more than once over the course of the year. Mm. So, like, why does it surprise me? Not really. But at the same time, yes, because you'd think that by now they would take this seriously. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of reasons. I mean, just think about, like, you know, we've talked about some of these things before. The idea that, like Americans with disability, because we're talking like the American public here, but I can also translate to Canada. But, you know, Americans, like 26% of the population of the United States having a disability, and that particular demographic controlling over $490 billion a year in terms of after-tax disposable income, you'd think that that's a good market to tap into. Mm-hmm. And then when you think about Canada, that's $55 billion, according to the Ontarian Chamber of Commerce, and we're talking 22% of the population on average.
Yeah.
So you'd think that this is a market that is worth investing into.
Denny, there might be a few people who are watching or listening this morning who are scoffing at this, saying, it's just fantasy sports. Does it really matter? I know this question might be a little bit leading, but do you have a reflection on why digital inclusion matters, whether it's access to something like a government website, online banking, booking a vacation, or in this case, playing fantasy sports?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, who would we be to, decide what is worth, What can someone access or doesn't access, basically, right? So if someone finds joy and happiness in using that particular app or playing that particular type of game, I think it's as important in terms of their well-being and their ability to be empowered to do what they feel is right than online banking is. I mean, we've seen, especially this past year, I mean, when we think back, not as if it was over yet, but thinking back of last year with the pandemic and when we started shifting over to a lot of virtual and online out of necessity, I know so many people who all of a sudden were completely cut out of services that to which they were already hanging by a thread. Mm. So I'm thinking groceries, for instance, like grocery shopping. When we were not able to go to the grocery store anymore, and you could not ask your neighbor anymore to do that for you, and you had to turn to an online service instead, and the service wasn't accessible, I personally know people who went for weeks and weeks without any fresh food, any fresh produce, or anything like that, and they had to feed on canned goods because there was no way for them to get anything like that. People who missed on their own, their house payments because they were not able to go to the bank, and then they the online banking wasn't accessible for them, that sort of thing. So, you know, we understand that this is important, but especially in a context where there's all this stress and, you know, games are made to release that tension, not being able to play the game that you want to play with your friends or something that you like or you enjoy, I think is another pretty, cruel way to remind people that they don't belong, that they don't matter as much as others do. And it really comes down to that awareness piece again, as I was saying at the beginning, like to make a change there.
Denny, we always appreciate your expertise and perspective. Thank you so much for making time for us today and dealing with one of my personal gripes.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you.
And that does serve as a reminder that if you have a personal digital inclusion gripe, please feel free to reach out to the show and let us know about it. Maybe we can pass it by Denise's desk as well. So send us emails, feedback@ami.ca, feedback@ami.ca, or you can always pick up the phone and give us a phone call, 1-866-509-4545, 1-866-509-4545. Let's bring in Mike Ross and get to the big business story of the day. Mike, some labor concerns really taking the forefront in regard to the business these days.
Yeah, a couple of big stories today, Dave. The union representing Bombardier and De Havilland aerospace workers in Toronto are threatening to hit the picket lines this week unless negotiations can guarantee the Dash 8 turboprops remain in the area when production resumes. This after a three-week cooling off period, and separate talks were set to restart today ahead of tomorrow's strike deadline. Unifor National President Jerry Dias says the negotiations are about protecting highly skilled advanced manufacturing jobs. About 2,200 members of Unifor Locals 112 and 673 at Toronto's Downview plant manufacture Bombardier's global business aircraft and, until recently, Dash 8 turboprops for De Havilland. The talks come as the aviation sector is taking steps to recover from government-forced shutdowns of international commercial travel because of COVID-19. Also, a strike already underway by 900 Rio Tinto workers at the mining company's aluminum smelting facilities in Kitimat, B.C. The union had issued a 72-hour strike notice after nearly 7 weeks of negotiations, and bargaining continued right up until the early Sunday strike deadline. Jerry Dias, once again from Unifor, saying the walkout is about what he calls Rio Tinto's greed and lack of respect for union members. The company said earlier it was committed to working with the union to reach a mutually beneficial outcome. So Unifor, rather busy these days, and looks like it'll continue to be so.
Mike, thank you for this. I really wonder how many conference calls a day Jerry Dias finds himself on. Oh my goodness, it's got to be a lot.
It does. And there's a great documentary out there that CBC did on the Unifor's involvement in trying to save the union jobs at the GM plant in Oshawa about 3 years ago. If you can dig that up, CBC put that together. We watched it not too long ago. And lots of Jerry Dias in there, certainly lots of union workers, lots of Canadian manufacturing union jobs that went away.
Really, really important topic. Mike, thank you for bringing it to us.
Okay, Dave.
That's Mike Ross with the big business story of the day. He'll be back in a couple of minutes with the regional news update. But coming up next, film reviewer Amy Amante will share her thoughts on the Netflix docuseries Penguin Town. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.